Truth's Trust, a non-profit, non-political, and non-sectarian organization on the roster of the Economic and Social Council of the United Nations, and concerned with the establishment of world cooperation and goodwill, presents Inner Sight with your host, Robert Anderson. He, with Sarah and Dale McKechnie, President and Vice President of Lucis Trust, will discuss philosophical and spiritual topics essential to everyday life. Now here's your host, Robert Anderson.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Inner Sight. Today we're doing a show, the theme of which is death and dying. And I'd like to start off the show by a quote from that famous speaker in American literature, speaker and also writer, Ralph Waldo Emerson. And his thought is as follows. "It is the secret of the world that all things subsist and do not die, but only retire a little from sight, and afterwards return again. Nothing is dead." I like another thought, too, about death, and it's as follows. "One of the most profound mysteries of life is that it ends in death. Helping us to understand this unavoidable fact is one of the major functions of religion. Spirituality understands that death is of the body only, not of the soul or spirit, which is undying." And I'd like to ask a question of Sarah and Dale, and we're going to pursue this topic, as I guess it's one of those topics that has many, many different layers to it, and our purpose, I guess, above all, is to see if we can help to dispel some of the fear that exists about death. And my question is, what happens to the being, the person, immediately after death?
Well, as I understand from what I have read, it depends on the state of the consciousness of the person before he dies. In other words, we cross over into life after death basically the same person we were when we were living in a physical body. We don't suddenly become transformed into some infinitely wiser being than we were on Earth. So that gives us a hint that it's a good idea to try to prepare for our death, to become as wise and as thoughtful as we can. But it also says that the life goes on essentially in the same state of consciousness that we lived on Earth. So for the people who are totally focused on the material plane and believe that the life of material things is the be-all and end-all of life, I suppose when they die, they're confused and a bit lost without a physical body. Those who have a more spiritual consciousness find that life goes on without the body, and in fact in a freer, more liberated sense, and with a clearer perception of relationships, because the strong sense of being a separated individual is very much linked to our possession of a physical body. Mm-hmm. And when we die, we are liberated from that illusion that we are a separated being, and we experience in a more direct way how interconnected we are to everything that we love and to all human beings.
I guess the point of death, that transition, is certainly a time of self-discovery where indeed we find out that we are not our body, because so many people, as you said, do associate their self-definition with the body. So when one finds out that the consciousness is what we really are, that must be quite a profound revelation of truth. Dale, would you...
Yes, I would agree with that. It's as Sarah said, it does depend a lot on the stage of consciousness that one is in a particular lifetime, and whether one is physically oriented or materially oriented to the material plane and sees life in terms of physical possessions and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And if the emotional life is very strong, then this is what one is going to encounter on the other side. This desire nature is still very strong, and it very likely will keep pulling the being back to the physical plane, back to physical existence.
You know, something that I think that's very interesting about death, according to spiritual teaching, is related to that expression, my life passed before my eyes. When people who have come very close to death say that they see their whole life passing before their eyes, well, in fact, that apparently does happen at our death. And according, as Dale was saying, to the state of our consciousness, we examine and evaluate and review our life. By we, I mean the soul, the real inner being dwelling within the body, conducts this review and apparently isolates the three most important, most significant episodes or events of that particular life. Three major life pivotal events or relationships, and all else is released and forgotten. But those major three experiences condition the soul in the next realm and help the soul make plans for future incarnations. I find that thought fascinating.
It is. It really is fascinating. How can we understand death? Maybe we can understand death in terms of what we're experiencing now in physical life and on this level of reality. And is there, in attempting to understand it from our perspective on this plane, is there a relationship between death and sleep? Perhaps we can understand it through that.
Yes, there is, because sleep is like a daily death in a way, except in the process of passing out of the body, and this happens to everybody, there is a consciousness part of us, and then there is a life part of us, the part of us that is actually a thread of life that originates from God, down by way of the soul, and this life thread is also anchored in our body, at the heart, in the region of the heart. There is another thread that is anchored in the region of the pineal gland, in the consciousness aspect. And at night when we go to sleep, this consciousness passes out of the body into the inner planes, but the life aspect stays and keeps the body functioning. So it's like death in a way, but at the time of death, both of these aspects are severed, and that's why there is no coming back.
I wonder if that's related to the fact that, I'm thinking of the time when my father died. He died of cancer, and it was a slow and painful process, and he was in hospice care. And I remember the hospice nurse saying, when I asked her why it was so hard and why it took him so long, she said, we struggle to be born and we struggle to die. And this thread or this link that Dale is talking about, that in a sense binds the soul, the inner being, to the physical body, is not easily severed. We think of life as so fragile, and it is. But on the other hand, there's a strong grip of the soul on its body that perhaps is the reason that the process of death takes a great deal of preparation and effort for the soul. I don't know. It's just a thought. And certainly we know that birth is not so easy either, for the baby or for the mother.
There is also the, at the time of death, also in the slow process which you mentioned, there is also a battle of... the physical form also has its kind of life to its of its own, made up of the physical substance of the body, the very atoms of the body. Each atom is a tiny life, we are told, and altogether this body forms a considerable force, which at the time of death may set up a counteraction against the action of the soul, which is trying to withdraw and be released from this body, the body also puts up a fight. And so at a certain stage, and this has been witnessed, I think, by people in the medical field, there is quite a struggle going on during this dying process.
Mm-hmm. So now we view the human experience as a intertwining of the soul and the personality. I'd like to differentiate. How does the soul view death, and is it different from the viewpoint or the angle of how the personality views death? Well, let's take one at a time. How does the soul view death?
Well, the soul views death as release, as liberation, because mm-hmm. if you think about it, the body, the physical form, is an encasement and a limitation to the soul. The soul is consciousness. It is free and liberated on its own plane, but when it resides in a physical body, it's constricted according to reasons that are known to the soul to enable it to fulfill its plan on earth. But the death of the physical body releases the soul, and that's why spiritual teachings often speak of death as a joyous experience, mm-hmm. and in fact, for the soul, it is. The personality views death as the end of its existence, and mm-hmm. in a sense, it is. It's the end of the separated, isolated individual consciousness. Consciousness continues, but not the sense of being a separated, isolated, unique individual, separate from all other human beings. That ends. And the personality has a lot staked on the continuation of its separated existence. So there is a bit of a struggle between the soul's plan and the personality's desire to remain independent and isolated.
What I'm concluding, based on what you're saying, and I may be wrong, I don't know, but we can view the personality's viewpoint might be comparable or analogous to that of an actor playing a role that he loves or maybe doesn't love, for that matter, and he leaves the role, and there might be a certain remorse with giving up the role.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Especially if the actor strongly identifies with the role and hates to let go, maybe.
Yeah, that brings up an interesting experiment, if anybody wants to try it. It gets back to the as-if technique. Just try to imagine, sit quietly for a while, and try to imagine that you are the soul inhabiting this body. And at the moment of death, you are trying to withdraw. So put yourself in the position of the soul, which is actually mm-hmm. yourself, and try to see death from that perspective. And mm-hmm. maybe you, in time, can understand the whole process a little better, because mm-hmm. it's seeing it from both angles.
Yeah. I hope that listeners don't find this whole discussion a bit morbid. It isn't meant to be. It's simply a recognition of the fact that every living thing on earth will die. Mm-hmm. It's the one experience that all living things, human, vegetable, animal, even mineral, share in common, the death of the body, of the form.
Mm-hmm. And for those people who just tuned in, you're listening to Inner Sight. And we're here with Dale and Sarah McKechnie. Sarah is our president. Dale is our vice president of Lucis Trust. And our theme today is Death and Dying. This is tape number 17. If you'd like to order our tape for a nominal fee, or you can order our books, you can order our cassette tapes, as I've mentioned, and information, if you'd like that as well, about our organization. You can call us at 1-866 NY Lucis, LUCIS. That's you can think of it like this. Just think of 1-866 New York Lucis. That's 1-866 NY Lucis. We also can be reached in other ways as well. You can reach us on our website at www.lucistrust.org, or email us newyork@lucistrust.org. And I might also add, too, that the work of Lucis Trust, including this program, is funded entirely by voluntary donations. Our books can also be purchased at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.com, or Borders. I'd like to, at that point, just continue with what we were speaking about before. And that is, another question is about reincarnation. And what about reincarnation? Do we start a new life immediately, or is there a waiting period?
Well, there are different spiritual theories on that. It's one of those questions that not every spiritual teaching views in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
The writings of Alice Bailey say that it depends upon the maturity of the soul. Souls are not all equal in consciousness. And if I recall, the more advanced souls spend a longer time out of the body, making plans for the return of the soul to physical incarnation. People who are less evolved tend to return more quickly and repeatedly for the gaining of the experience the soul needs. But there are other spiritual teachings that say the exact opposite. I don't know, Dale, do you have any opinions on a subject for which you have no expertise?
That's what I understand. As I think we've mentioned before, that it depends on the state of consciousness. Now, and someone who is not as evolved as the average person, then they may be pulled back into the life more quickly because the pull of the material world is very strong, and that counteracts the grip of the soul. But the whole objective, really, on Earth is eventually reaching a state where we can, where we don't have to reincarnate ever again, unless for the purposes of service, in God's service. And so the more advanced one is in terms of consciousness, the less one has to return to the physical world, because he or that being has worked through the stages, and he's worked off his karma, and he's worked through the perfection stage, and his consciousness is much more evolved, much more inclusive. And he's done his service, he's paid his dues, so to speak, and he's reached a stage where literally one is free.
Well, if we accept the idea that the soul goes through a multiple number of lifetimes of human experiences, then does the soul have a plan and purpose for each of those multiple lives?
It does, and in fact, it apparently plans for several lifetimes at a time, and has a particular agenda, I guess you could say, that it tries to work out, always in terms of relationships, not on its own, but in through the group relationships that the soul forms on Earth. Its plans are furthered, and after death it reassesses, as I said. It identifies the three most significant episodes in that particular lifetime and makes its plans based on the success or the lack of success that it achieved, and prepares for its return.
Mm-hmm. I've got another question, and we're referring to Scripture at this point when I ask this. When Christ said, "Render unto Caesar that which is Caesar, and to God that which is God's," was he at all in any way referring to the death process?
Oh, I think so.
Yes, I think so. I think that's probably the spiritual interpretation of that quote, or that saying by Christ, because Caesar, of course, is symbolic of the physical nature, the physical, the material world, and you render unto God everything of a spiritual nature, the soul, everything is returned, and all the experience that we gain in the world is returned, it's retained in the great memory banks of the soul, and that is returned and becomes part of the great divine consciousness of God.
To me, it also pertains to the experience that we see in the natural world with death and decay. It refers to the restorative process, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Which we can see in, for example, the death of a tree. I can remember visiting Armstrong Woods Park in Northern California, where there are these giant redwood trees, and seeing one especially huge, magnificent tree on the ground dead, and yet the life that was springing out of that tree was incredible. Mm-hmm. Bugs and new trees and shoots were growing out of it, and it was a hotbed of activity, even in its death and decay. Mm-hmm. And that's what I think of when I hear the expression, render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. Decay and disease are part of the process of death and release and renewed life. It's natural and it's right. It's mm-hmm. not a misfortune.
I've got a big question for you, and I don't think we can discuss it in a short time, but we can at least touch upon it. What is karma? What is karma, and how does it affect a particular life?
Well, karma has been defined as the law of cause and effect. And for every action that we take in the world, often there is a reaction somewhere. Now, if we incur bad karma, if we create if we break the law, we injure somebody, or we... God forbid we should cause the death of another person, then that is building up a considerable karmic debt that has to be paid off. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't look at karma as so much as being punishment.
It's not a penalty, then?
Not really, because mm-hmm. I think it has more to do with balance. Mm-hmm. The soul tries to maintain a central path, and certain actions taken by the personality life may throw that life path off and throw it off balance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think certain actions have to be paid back in a sense, not in the sense of being punished, but it has to be brought back into balance, perhaps in another lifetime with that same person mm-hmm. that we injured. Or whatever the karma is. It could be good karma, too.
Disease is an aspect of that, because it means literally dis-ease, lack of balance, lack of mm-hmm. equilibrium. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't mean that one has erred or sinned. We all are prone to disease because we're human and we are all prone to error. And it's simply the method by which, as Dale says, the soul restores equilibrium.
In an earlier show, Sarah, I think one way to underscore what you're saying, too, is in an earlier show you did so well with the concept of suicide, and you explained that perhaps, possibly, the karma of someone who had committed suicide might be in the next incarnation to have to go through experiences that would teach him to value his own life.
Right.
And it's not a punishment, but it's a learning experience to value not only the life of everyone else, but to value one's own life as well, and that we have to face and go through certain experiences, and although they may be tough, that isn't the answer, because valuing life is of the highest priority, even one's own, or especially maybe one's own.
Right. It's what's given to us by God. Our life is entrusted to us by God, and we must regard it as the precious gift it is.
Mm-hmm. Does reincarnation... does it help to explain the existence of genius? We hear of so many geniuses that have existed throughout humanity's history. Who was it, Mozart, who could sit down at the age of 3 or 4 and compose a concert that would be enough to dazzle the musician with the highest expertise?
I suppose it does. I think this would probably be another program all on its own.
Uh-huh.
It takes us a bit off the subject of death, except that it's related in the sense that death is a repeated process, and through reincarnation over and over again, the soul gains its gifts, its talents, and the genius is someone who's particularly developed along one particular line. I don't think it necessarily means that he's a perfected spiritual being, but that talent along one particular line is extraordinarily accelerated.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because often our so-called geniuses are deficient in many other aspects of life. Like Einstein was a genius at nuclear physics, perhaps, but he was pretty absent-minded too in other respects. So I mean, he has some balancing out to do there, perhaps, that great soul.
Can I bring in one little thought before we close our program?
Certainly.
That is especially
mm-hmm.
precious to me? It's from the Hindu scripture, the Bhagavad Gita. And I think mm-hmm. if people hear this, they will find it deeply reassuring. It's Krishna who said that, "Know thou, there was never a time when I, nor thou, nor any of these princes of earth was not, nor shall there ever come a time hereafter when any of us shall cease to be." I think mm-hmm. that is deeply reassuring, and it's a thought we should close on, perhaps, in this discussion of death.
Well, that is a very profound thought at that. Before we do close, I would just like to say once again, if anyone would like to order this tape, that's tape number 17, or any of our books, we have books that relate to these subjects. One book that's very profound on this subject is Death, the Great Adventure. And give us a call at our toll-free number, 1-866-NY-LUCIS. That's 1-866-NY-LUCIS, L-U-C-I-S. Or an easy way to remember it, too, is 1-866-NY-LUCIS. And I would like to, at this point, close. And we invite you to ponder on this thought. Goodwill is the touchstone that will transform the world. And goodwill is love in action. It is the energy that draws us together in right relationship. There is a world prayer called the Great Invocation. It is a call for light and love and goodwill to flow into the world and into our hearts. So let's listen for a moment to these powerful words, and if you choose to, you can certainly say those words along with us.
From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into human minds. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into human hearts. May the coming one return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide all little human wills, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the human race, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth.